Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with the Rock Paper Podcast to tell you about my friend's music record shop. Go check them out, 4191A Manchester Avenue in the heart of the Grove, right between the demo and the ready room. Check them out every Friday, they got new music happy hour. This Friday, new records from Ben Folds, Destroyer, Beirut, and Gary Clark Jr. They do live in-store performances on Saturdays. Next one is The Company She Keeps, presented by Four Hands Brewery and Gramophone. Check them out Saturday, September 19th, 2 to 4. The Company She Keeps will live in-store performance. Go online, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, musicrecordshop.com.
Podcast is kind of like a, it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hey, this is Sean Arredondo, and this is Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Hey, hanging out with the repeater.
Repeater. I said Peter.
This is Sean Arredondo.
Arredondo, right? Yes.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
Oh, my middle name's Pierre.
Yeah?
Yeah. I got this Celtic first name, French middle name, and a Spanish sir last name.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun growing up in inner city Houston with a name like Sean Pierre Arredondo.
Yeah.
Especially with an older brother. I became P in the air. They're free.
We are hanging out in O'Fallon, Missouri, at the Rendezvous Cafe,
mm-hmm.
right here on Highway K. Nice little spot. Come check them out. Sean's got, well, how long have you been here? Like 2 years or something?
Here,
or?
We started a little bit over 3 years ago.
Oh, 3 years?
October. She's 15, so probably... Oh, gosh. 2000, I can't add, 12, 2011?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, about 2011, we did a show. It was me, Johnny Kavanaugh, Kevin Patterson. We used to kind of do shows and call it Half a Ton of Fun. And that was, you know, I approached Tom and Stephanie, the owners of Rendezvous, and said, hey, I got an idea. And they're like, okay, let's try. And it went over real well.
Yeah.
And like I said, this has been our third full year of actually doing it. We started out with just every other month, and we kind of decided, hey, well, let's try to go once a month. And this coming up September 11th and 12th is the first time we're actually going to try a Friday and Saturday show. And nice. I'm nervously excited.
Yeah.
Just interested to see what's going to happen. The place, the room is great. It's not real big, but it doesn't take many to fill it up with laughter.
Sure.
I haven't had any complaints from any of the comics. I've had great constructive criticisms that have only made the room even better. My goal is to make that room into a little comedy club for a short little while. And what's interesting, the back of the room is all windows. And that's kind of made me nervous, but it's actually helped create a neat atmosphere for the room.
Yeah.
So... I'm excited to see where we're going to go from here.
Yeah. You mentioned there the coming up September 11th and 12th, mm-hmm. 8:30 p.m. It's Charlie Winfrey, Ryan Dalton, Tim Convey, and
Jeremy Helwig. Yeah.
Yeah. And Sean will be performing as well.
Mm-hmm. I always like to open the show, get the crowd warmed up. That way it gives all the comics a fair shot without having to dig themselves out of a cold audience.
Right.
And if with a great opener, it just sets the tone for the rest of the show.
Yeah.
And I just put that on myself.
Sure.
When I started in Dallas, nobody wanted to open. And the big thing was, I don't want to go in front of a cold audience.
Yeah.
Well, that's how I got work.
Yeah.
And the thing I like about opening is the audience is clean. They come to a comedy show. They want to laugh. They just want us to try.
Yeah.
And, I mean, no one's gone on and did dick jokes or shit jokes or baby rape jokes.
All right.
And they're just a clean slate. And I like starting shows off on a good foot.
Yeah. Yeah, that, you know, a lot of people, you know, think it's, that the, you know, the opener is like your least experienced comic or something, you know, and all that stuff. But when you're, that's a tough job to fill, you know, when you got to come in there and you got to, like, get people to start laughing. I mean, regardless, get people to laugh whenever, but, like, you know, just, first grab their attention and stuff. And
that's a huge misconception because so people are so used to comedy clubs. You know, and truthfully, the openers usually are the least experienced. I mean, they're there for the headline.
Yeah.
But when you get into a comedy show that's not at a comedy club, your first comic has to grab the audience right away.
Oh, yeah.
Or you immediately start running uphill.
Yeah.
And it just gets harder and harder. And so that's really, you know, wow, women are loud.
So there's a some sort of meeting behind us of some sort. I don't know what the...
They're cute. Get the cuteness dinner. Yeah. No, I don't know what it is. They look like they're having a good time.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's having a good time here at the Rendezvous Cafe.
Yeah. They stuck us by the restroom.
One night I went down to Pops to help promote the show, and they gave me a little table booth kind of setup thing, and I set my banner out there and stickers and flyers and trying to advertise a little bit. And but they set me up like right by the bathroom, and I was like, oh great, now I get to smell farts all night. And you know, like,
bathroom attendant. Yeah. Hi, how am I? Here's my podcast.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Don't wipe with that.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's you know, hey man, we take what we can get. So
yes, we do.
Yeah, this is a fine place for a podcast. But yeah, man, this is like you said, you've been doing it 3 years. You guys, you've been doing great out here, man. You've been bringing out some heavy hitters. I know I was here a while back for Josh Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of my favorites to watch. Anytime you can.
Well, one of my favorites in St. Louis. Gosh, he's just awesome.
Yeah,
I've been real lucky. You know, we've had Andy Smith on the show, which is recently Last Comic Standing. Tim Northern has been on the show, which is the Last Comic Standing last year. And you know, it just goes on from there. And even some of the more up-and-coming comics, you know, like your Josh Arnold.
Yeah.
Joe Murray was here this year. And he was just awesome.
Yeah, Joe's great.
Yeah.
I saw, like, I think it was, like, Time Hop or whatever. But it was a flyer for a show. It was Josh Arnold, Sean O'Brien, Joe Murray, and Steve Poggi on a weekend. They did the four of them at the Funny Bone, and I was like, man, that was such a good time. Like but those, you know, those four guys are so good, and like they're a lot of fun to watch. And it's just especially like guys like Josh and Joe, like you said, these guys, like guys that I've known for years now, and watching them, you know, continue to grow and, you know, work their craft and get better. And it's just and yourself too, like, man, it's just fun watching. It's just fun watching you guys. I don't know, I enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Sean O'Brien. It brings you up to our next show, which is going to be October 17th. We're going to have Andrew Frank. He's actually going to close the show with a long set, but we're also going to have a short set by Sean O'Brien and Kenny Kynes, and of course I'll open. So another great show.
I thought you were going to say another great opener. yeah, man, that's that. And like I said, that lineup's killer, man. That Andrew Frank, he's just been on a roll.
I tell you something awesome about Andrew. When I moved to St. Louis 5 years ago, I'd been doing comedy about 6 years, and I saw Andrew at Glass of Laugh. It was a comedy club that was opened up here in O'Fallon.
Right.
It only lasted like 3 months.
Right.
Yeah, it closed. It opened the end of September, and it closed basically December 31st.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun there. It actually, you know, with Al Canal's help, it got me back into comedy. When I moved here, I didn't think I was going to be able to do it anymore. And, you know, Al started letting me do time. He introduced me to Johnny Cavanaugh, and Johnny Cavanaugh started to work me. And through that, I started meeting a lot more comics, and some took me out on the road. So, I mean, I'm just thankful for that. But that's where I saw Andrew Frank for the first time as just a beginning open micer. And he had such a view about him that I told him, people are going to tell you lots of things. Just be you. Right. And he's stuck to his guns. Sometimes I think it's even, you know, gotten his way. Mm-hmm. But I think him being him, he's got a neat, unique style that I just love. And yeah, it seems like he, like you said, he's just getting better and better and stronger and stronger. So I'm really excited about that show, too.
Yeah, I think he's really finding his voice in comedy and, like, and like you said, kind of his own path, and so it's exciting to watch. I know he's been getting more road gigs, and he just got his first headline weekend at
Valley Park.
Like, it's just fun to see great things coming to him.
Sean O'Brien as well. Yeah. I loved it. He was battling with, I think someone told him somewhere, he sounds a lot like Bill Burr.
Yeah,
and I think it bothered him that, was he trying to be a Bill Burr clone? And it's like, no, it's just Sean.
Yeah, he's also angry.
He recently, over the past year to year and a half, has really embraced it, and it's just fun to watch.
Right.
So I'm really excited.
I feel like I'm on a sitcom with, like, a laugh track or something.
We're funny. We're not even trying.
Yeah, we're.
We need a boom camera.
Yeah. I don't even know if it's getting picked up on the mic quite, but it's, anyway.
It sounds like Grackles.
Yeah. But yeah, man, Sean has become a good buddy. He's been on the show. Kenny Kynes has been on the show. Andrew Frank, Charlie Winfrey, Ryan Dalton, Tim Convey. They've all from your show coming up this weekend. They've all been on the show. So it's just, I've been trying to get around town recording with as many of my friends as I can. And
I love the podcast. I mean, what has excited me about your podcast is, you know, you're so into the music too.
Yeah.
And I mean, you got all these great up and coming bands that are on the show. And it's just so much fun. I really like it, because when I started in comedy, there wasn't a lot of stage time that I could get to. Mm-hmm. And a guy in a band said, "Why don't you come open for the show?" And I was like, okay. And I thought, oh, this is great. You know, I get to do my own time.
Yeah.
And I got there and I learned real fast that music audience is not really there for comedy.
Yeah.
And, oh, at first, you know, because I didn't have the confidence, I didn't really know what I was doing. Oh, they ate me alive. I ate it so many times. I had everything from popcorn to a spit cup thrown at me. But then I learned, get them on my side.
Yeah.
And then get them into the jokes. And then introduce the band.
For sure.
And it got to be so much fun. And other bands started asking me to open, and even got to the point where a couple of clubs asked me to MC some shows.
Nice.
And that's how I progressed quickly. And it was just finding a place where I could go up.
Yeah. And yeah, it's really actually quite a great idea, because, like you said, sometimes it's not, they're not always as responsive to it. But the fact that, like, If you got a band on the bill and, you know, you don't have enough, like, you know, they always usually have their stuff set out there after sound check and all that stuff, where you don't need any setup, you just need a mic, you know, you come out and you, mm-hmm. So it's very easy to adapt to that stage and stuff, and not having to, you know, set up another drum kit or guitars and all that other stuff. So it's, it's a pretty good idea for that sense, but, it's just a matter of working the crowd the right way to be able to get them on your side and to be responsive to it.
I was real lucky. There was a place in Denton, Texas. It was a pizza parlor, but they had a basement. And a lot of, at that time, I tried a lot of music comedy shows, and it just never seemed to quite work.
Yeah.
But for some reason, they had a house band named Bone Doggy, and he and I just clicked, and it was awesome. It was a live band. He played mostly covers. Great music from the 70s and 80s, more rock. And they would open like a 30-minute set, And then they would play intros for all the and exit stuff for all the comics. And they would do a comic. They'd do like a 15-minute set, next comic. And it was a fun show. We called it Second Saturday Comedy Music Comedy and Music Review. And he worked for a local newspaper, so he would make these awesome posters for the shows. And we had a little following there for a little while.
Nice.
And it was just a fun show.
Yeah. I've mentioned it on here, and I'm hopefully getting some things in the works. But I would love to do more when I eventually get to my own, in a time where or a place where I can do like a Rock Paper Podcast Presents kind of and start doing my own shows and a similar sort of idea, like we're bringing music and comedy together, and like so in some sense hopefully within later this year or early next year I can get to that point where it's also difficult when you're working full-time job and everything else, so it's a hopefully one of these days I'll get there, but that's kind of the dream. I'd love to start actually being able to showcase my friends that are have been on the show and put them in a live setting where they can show really what they can do. And
That would be awesome.
Yeah,
I'm just thinking out of the top of my head, like what's been going on in the duck room. I think it'd be an awesome spot. Something like that.
I gotta find the right club and they're willing to give me a shot.
And the right people. I got lucky with Tom and Stephanie here at Rendezvous. At first they gave me a chance, and then I think they started to see, what I wanted to do, and it just worked.
Yeah.
And it's neat. It's like that with everything. It's like bands. You have members from one group that don't seem to work out. The next thing you know, two or three of them get together, and then there's the band.
Yeah.
A lot of young comics, they think that, like, people get lucky breaks. They think, that there's a lot of politics in the comedy, and there is somewhat. But like I tell people, comedy clubs aren't going to put you up if they don't know you.
Yeah.
You got to develop that relationship.
Sure.
And that's what I try to do, is let them get to know me and let it go from there.
Yeah. I get that a lot, I think it was Eric Anker was in town when he was living here for a while, and I ran into him at the Funny Bone, and I hang out there quite a bit, and people assume that, like, because that's what they always say, like, you want to work, you got to be, seen there and stuff like that. And I think Eric Anker came up to me one time. He's like, "Yeah, man, I haven't got to see you perform yet." And I'm like, "Oh no, I don't perform. I'm no comic. I'm just a big fan." So I just thought it was really funny, though. Like, just he assumed that me hanging out there, I had to be a comic. And, but he was like, "Oh, that's even cooler that you just doing this because you love it." So I'm like, "Yeah." I don't know. I've thought about it. Like, now, like, I've been doing it more, like, doing this podcast more. But I don't know. I'd rather leave it up to you guys. You guys are much better than I am, but I think it'd be just fun to experience, to try going up an open mic and just see what happens. I don't know.
Oh God, I can't remember my buddy's name. That's what's great. Are the people that hate our fans, and so many fans are funny.
Right.
They'll admit it. They can't get up in front of other people and do it. And I was real nervous the first time I did it, man. But as soon as I did, I was hooked.
Yeah. When was that?
Oh gosh, 2004.
Yeah.
And my wife signed me up for a seminar with a guy, comic by the name of Dean Lewis. He was a working comic with the Improv in Addison, and he was also a radio personality. And his classes were always during the week. Well, I worked till 7, and he finally offered a class on a weekend as a kind of a present. My wife got it for me. I wonder if she regrets that sometimes, because from the get-go,
right,
I was hooked. And it was an 8-week course, and then we got to do a showcase there at the Improv, and like I said, I was just hooked. Uh-huh. I had to do it. That was in August of 2004.
Yeah.
No, October. Well, it started in August. The showcase was on October 18th, 2004. Like I said, I found the book today, and by the end of that year, like I said, because stage time was really hard to find, and there was a TV clean open mic that was run by a lady by the name of Linda Stogner. Incredibly funny comic, incredibly talented artist. She's won like 5 Emmys for the work she's done. She worked with PBS. And there were 6 of us that approached her to do a show. You know, we had to be TV clean. And because she had shows on weekends, and she let us do one after her regular show. And we filled that place up. It was amazing. We had people sitting up in the rafters. And, you know, we were hooked then. And then that was in December of 2004. And then in January, we were at the West End Comedy Theater. And that was an even bigger show. And what was funny about that is the first show, they wanted me to open the other comics. And I was nervous, but I like the way the one guy put it. They said, "Sean, you could open a Klan meeting." And I was like, okay. And it was a blast. The second show we did, I got to go up next to last. And when the first comic hit, there were 6 of us, so when the first comic hit, I started going through my set list in my head. I couldn't remember any of my jokes. Not a single one. I was just freaking out. And even up to the point that they introduced me, I couldn't remember. But as soon as I hit the stage, I just went off. Yeah. And I remember I made the comedy club owner laugh out loud. It was a joke about how I'm surprised companies like Milton Bradley haven't made drinking board games, just parodies of the classic. Yeah. Like you said, Hungry Hungry Hippo would be Thirsty Thirsty Wino. Well, I think there should be a drunk Squeegee board called the Squeegee board. And that week, Hunter S. Thompson had committed suicide. And I said, they should have the Squeegee board. Said, everyone, place your hands on the sacred shot glass. We're going to try and channel Hunter S. Thompson. And he just exploded with laughter. And I was just like, oh my God, I got him. And that's one of my favorite moments from early in my comedy career, if you can call it a career. My glorified hobby.
Right. Hey, man. That's sometimes, you know, that's all it takes to start off as doing something you love as a hobby, and eventually somebody, you know, you get around to getting paid for it. So,
yeah. The first time I ever got paid is by a guy named Nestor Lopez. He paid me $35. And you know what I bought with it? It was a giant, like, 3-foot-tall thing action figure. From the Fantastic Four,
yeah.
From the one that Michael Chiklis wore. And this thing's massive. And you know, I see all these people that have like their first dollar frame. Nope, I got a giant thing.
Yeah.
I still have it to this day. And actually, the first money I made in St. Louis doing comedy, I bought like a 3-foot-tall Darth Vader. So in other words, I'm a nerd.
I heard that... Did you go watch that new Fantastic Four?
I did not see it.
I heard the ratings were, or reviews were awful, and like, I don't know.
I heard that, and I didn't go see it in the movies, but also I have 2 daughters.
Yeah.
So us trying to get away to the movies can be kind of difficult. Yeah. But I love Dr. Doom. I've always liked Dr. Doom, and he looked cool in the trailer, but I just don't know. You know, from the reviews, that kind of scared me off.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm going to spend the money to go to the movie, I want to enjoy it.
Sure.
And I don't know. I mean, I liked the first one. A lot of people didn't.
Yeah.
And I'm funny. Everyone's like that. It seems like the critics say one thing, and we seem to like the exact opposite. And but, you know, I try to go into things with an open mind. Just recently, I worked with Dustin Diamond.
Yeah.
And actually, I had to pick him up from the Columbia Regional Airport and drive him to Lake of the Ozarks. And I was just like, okay, this is going to be interesting. But I went into it with an open mind, and we had a great time. Man, he had some hilarious stories from the road. And that's what we did for a couple hours, is just talk comedy. And that's one of my favorite parts, is sitting around, talking to the shop, telling the stories, the camaraderie you get.
Sure.
I think that's why I've always seemed to have done stuff like O'Fallon Out Loud. That first group, we called ourselves the Unusual Suspects. Kevin and Johnny Kavanaugh, half a ton of fun.
Yeah.
I did a show with, it was supposed to be me, Hank Hamlet, Scott James, and Matt Conte. And we were going to call it Four Fathers. And that was fun. Hank ended up not being able to do it, but we got Andy Smith, so we did Four Fathers and One Bad Mother, and she was fantastic. Yeah. That was one of my favorite shows here at O'Fallon. I opened, Warren DeMunt Scott had a great set. Matt Conte rattled this room.
Yeah, he's so good, man.
And I felt kind of bad for Andy, because about 15 minutes into her set, she got the laugh of the night. It was huge. And it was like all of a sudden the biggest check drop happened. Oh. Everyone just was tired. Yeah. It just wore out. And I admit that this room, it seems like about 80 to 90 minutes is tops.
Right.
That's one thing that bugs me with a lot of little bar shows, where there's so many comics and they go so long and the audiences are tired. You know, I've always was told that if you're going to do a show, you want a great show.
Right.
Because the minute you have a bad show, the people won't come back.
Right.
And that's a tough position to be in, because everybody's looking for more stage time. And maybe the room's just not right for them. And so it's hard telling people no. But for, you know, to put the best product forward, you have to be picky.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the harder things to do.
Yeah.
But to provide a good show, you got to do it.
Yeah. I like that. I think it's great, too, that you're doing it here in O'Fallon, because we don't really have a lot of entertainment necessarily on the on this side of the river. You know, there's bars doing cover bands and things on Friday and Saturday nights and stuff. But, yeah, we definitely don't have much for comedy out this way. So it's cool that there's something a little different, you know, and all.
Yeah, and that was the inspiration, cause especially after Glass of Glass left, a lot of people, you know, they wanted to see me, but they didn't want to go to even Westport, yeah, which is only really 30 minutes away.
Yeah.
And so that's what really started the whole idea of doing something here in town. after I left Dallas, I had said I would never produce another show. Well, now here we are, about to enter our fourth year.
Yeah, right.
But I did... The first time I really tried to do a show, it was a group thing, and it was fun, and I tried to keep it a group thing where there was really no one that was like the dictator or the leader. I didn't want it to become that way, and it reminds me of that old saying, the minute you try to make everybody happy, you piss everybody off.
Right.
So when I started this, I was like, no, this is my show. I'm taking responsibility for the failures and the successes. And it's been working.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great, man. That, like I said, continued success, man. I've been enjoying coming out to some of these when I can. And, yeah, always some fresh faces and, you know, a bunch of up-and-coming comics. And it's just, like I said, it's great to see in the Fallon area, man.
Yeah, especially if we're able to continue to go month to month. Yeah, I'm going to be depending on the fresh faces, and I've been telling a lot of the young guys, I'm going to need this.
Yeah.
And they need it too. You know, it'll help give them the confidence for when they do get the opportunities to open. And I try to share with the guys, because, I mean, I wish I had a little more insight before going and doing some of the shows I've done for the first time.
Yeah.
The Funny Bone here at Westport is one of the last in the country that still has three shows on Saturday. And even though you're only on stage 7 to 10 minutes, it's amazing how tiring you can get on that show.
Yeah.
And then you think about the headliner, who's usually up there 40 to 45 minutes. Three shows in one night,
right,
is just exhausting.
Yeah.
But it's been awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It seems like a lot of the special engagement headliners, come in, like, they don't even do the midnight show. They'll bring in somebody else to do the midnight show and stuff. They're like, two's my limit. And
yeah. A cool thing about that, though, is that when they do that, that it gives the usually the feature act then gets pushed to be the headliner, or they let a local guy come in and do it that may not be a normal headliner.
Right.
So it's another way for them to stretch their legs
for sure
and see if they got that chance.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I would love for an opportunity for something like that. It just You get lucky sometimes, and sometimes you have to make your own luck.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, even with the show, like, I knew, like, I had a passion for doing stuff like this, like, you know, just helping promote and everything, but I knew nobody was just going to offer me the, you know, so it was something I had to create on my own, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like, so, and that's exactly what you got going out here, too, you know, like I said, you gotta make your own opportunities sometimes, so.
I think it was either Mickey Mantle or Roger Maris is a. You ever notice the hardest working people are usually the luckiest?
Yeah.
So
that's pretty true, man.
Yeah.
I feel like that. I mean, you know, that's a lot of people say to me a lot, like, you know, how I do what I do, and like, you know, when do I sleep and everything. And I'm like, I just, you know, I'm hoping the hustle pays off. You know, I'm like, I'm just trying to capture every opportunity I can, and you know, so.
I remember when I was doing comedy at first, you know, I had a full-time job. I just had a brand new baby, my first child.
That's another full-time job.
Yeah. And then I was doing stand-up and pretty dedicated. And I told somebody that if it doesn't feel like you have two full-time jobs, it's a hobby.
Yeah.
And you really have to commit to it. And then I actually tried doing improv too. It was with Comedy Sports that was there in Dallas. I took a class and was invited to join, and it was just too much for me to juggle at that time. My hat's off to the guys that can do it. I mean, I'm still a huge fan of improv, and improv does nothing but strengthen a stand-up comic. Stand-up comedy doesn't do a whole lot for improv,
right.
But it's still entertainment.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, like, you look at those guys. I just saw Tommy John again a while back, and like, and he's, for me, he's like one of the quickest minds like up there, because he, and I don't know if he's got an improv background or not, but like, just but he writes a lot on stage. Like, you can tell, like, even like his first 10 minutes of his act usually are totally, you know, unscripted, kind of, you know, off the cuff kind of stuff, you know, and he starts making fun of like the crowd from watching the previous acts, like he can pick up on stuff or whatever it is, and he just starts going off, and it's just like, it's so much fun to watch, because you know it's not part of his, you know, routine or, you know, something his set. And
One of the constructive criticisms that I was getting when I left Texas was, and I was opening a lot, was that I was starting to sound rehearsed.
Yeah.
And a buddy of mine named Sean as well at the Absent Improv, he goes, I bet you rehearse when you drive. And I had to laugh, because I do. I do jokes as I'm driving down the road.
Right.
And a buddy of mine named Paul Varghese, he was telling me, you know, that I needed to get away from that set up punchline. I needed to become more organic. And I've gotten to the point where actually I really don't use a set list.
Yeah.
I kind of go over an idea of what jokes I would like to do, and I really let the audience dictate where I go.
Yeah.
Paul also told me, he said, when I start doing the longer sets, he says, something's going to happen in the audience. There will always be something that will happen.
Yeah.
And if I have a joke that goes with what happens, he says, throw it right away. And the audience will be like, wow, he pulled that out of his ass. And it's worked so many times. And like you're talking about Jonathan, he does that. He'll hit the stage, and it's almost like he makes something happen, and he just runs with it. And it makes the show feel so personable and organic at that moment. It's a moment that won't ever be the same.
For sure, yeah.
Another one I see that I like that does that is Jeff Tate.
Yeah.
I saw a midnight show with him. That he had this one little talkie helper lady. It was hysterical. And the whole show was him just kind of getting her to be quiet.
Yeah.
Ian Bagg.
Yeah.
Wow. That dude is amazing.
Yeah.
There's a guy that y'all may not be as aware of. His name's Raj Sharma out of Dallas. He works a crowd like you would not believe. And he's taken off. He's actually toured in India several times, and man, and they go crazy for comedy in India. They sell out, you know, hundreds of thousands of tickets in a matter of minutes. And so, you know,
there was a, I can't remember his name now, but I was listening to the Crab Feast podcast with Ryan Sickler and Jay Larson,
mm-hmm.
I listen to that weekly, and it's just it's fun to hear them, their road stories. But they had a guy on, and like I said, I can't remember his name now, but he does a lot of you know, dates over there and stuff. And like I said, they were talking about how, like, you know, he's huge over in, you know, India and all these stuff, whatever, you know, these different countries and stuff, where you wouldn't think comedy would be as big, but they, like, they, you know, they don't get a lot of it. So, like, when they come over there, they, those guys can quickly become, you know, huge stars and stuff. So
yeah, I had a friend, Todd Justice, out of Texas, and big tall Texan. He went over to Europe and they just loved him. It was just like, you know, most people would, you know, don't know who he is, but I mean, he's over there, they love him.
Right.
I think in the UK, comedy is huge.
Sure.
There's a lot of great comedy coming out of the UK right now. So
who's your favorite while working these days? Who's some of the guys you really like to watch?
Who I like to watch right now, man. Of course, Bill Burr is one of my favorites. I really like the Jim Gaffigan show.
Yeah.
Oh my God, my friends in KC, Jim and Amy, turned me on to it, and I watched like every episode in one sitting, and it is just absolutely hysterical. Let's see who else, like, you know, Tommy John again. Oh God. Man, there's so, I love comedy, so there's so many people I watch. One thing, I like watching a lot of local comedy.
Yeah.
You know, one time I was asked, you know, who are the guys that inspire me, and a lot of it's my peers, the guys that are around me that really inspire me. You know, there's, you know, you have your classics, your George Carlin, your Richard Pryor that we all tried to become. I can't remember his name now. There's just Chad Daniels. I love Chad Daniels. It's just been great.
His joke from his half an hour, I believe, was on Comedy Central, and he's got the joke about his, you know, his baby's foot can, you know, is only like this big, but it can crush all your dreams or something. He's so funny, and he's got so much great material about his kids, you know. And it's like a different, you know, I've heard a lot of you know, people, obviously, you know, a lot of comedy comes from watching their kids and being a father and or mother, and but yeah, he's got a totally different look on it, and like some of the stuff he says about his kids just kills me, man.
I think that's one of the things that's been so inspiring about Chad, is I've got to hang out with him a couple of times, and we talk all about our kids.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing. My oldest, when she was in pre-K, they invited me there to do like a career day because I was a comic. And I took a mic and a boom box so all the kids could tell jokes. And they all got stage fright.
Yeah.
And they all were telling the same joke. It was the knock knock, who's there, banana joke.
Kills, man. Just
what? Aeson, two kids went, so I sent Aeson up, and she was going to tell this cute joke about where do cows go on the first date, the movies. And but she did the banana orange joke.
Yeah.
And when they said, who's there, she locked up and said, the F word! And just like, oh, and it got the biggest laugh. I was just like, oh my God. The next two kids both said the F word. And I'm just mortified. So that's the oldest. The youngest started. Well, okay, the end of the school year last year, she was in first grade, and you know, the last week of school they don't do a whole lot, especially in first grade. So I asked her, "What'd you do in school today?" And she said, "We practiced the N word." Nice,
right.
Nice. They were practicing being nice.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay, so that was the last week of school last year. First week of school, my youngest started kindergarten. Are you familiar with the Kissing Hand? It's a little kid story about a baby raccoon on the first day of school. Oh my God!
Oh my gosh! I was wondering who was so.
It's my mistress. Does Scott know you're here? It's with me. I don't think so. Hey, come back here. That's actually one of my wife's best friends from college. They were in the same sorority.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. You never know who you're going to run into.
You never do. But the kissing hand. Oh my God. It's about this baby raccoon. First day of school. Hey, how you doing? How you doing? Good. You like a burger with that shake? Back to the story. So the kissing hand. It's about a baby raccoon who's afraid to go to school. So the mama raccoon kisses the baby on the hand and says, "Whenever you get scared, you can put your hand up to my cheek, and it'll be like I'm kissing you." And so they had to find the raccoon in the school. So after they told the story, they took the kids on a tour to find the raccoon. And they actually found the raccoon in the library, and so they decorated their classroom with it. Fun little story. So, but I asked Callie, "What'd you do at school today?" And she said, "We hung a coon in class."
But, yeah.
No. I wanted to poke my ears out. Just, no. Right. It's just the things children say.
Yeah.
Just.
I work in an elementary, so I hear silly things like this daily. You know, it's like, same thing. I mean, and anytime, like, I get them, they come want to tell me jokes or whatever, that stuff. And it's always just like a, you know, like a Laffy Taffy joke or whatever, you know, something that read off of that and, or whatever it is. But yeah, it's just some of the craziest stories, and like these kids will say stuff, and they don't, you know, and completely innocent. They don't know any better, but they'll say things, and I'm like, yeah, it's not quite what you think. You know.
One of my favorite jokes came from a little kid. Nathan Virtue, the daughter of the woman that just walked by that I hit on. one day, and people are always trying to give comics jokes, and rarely do they seem to work. But he got me. He walks up and said, "Sean, I got a joke for you." I was like, "What is it, Nathan?" And Nathan goes, "What do you get when you cross a mushroom, a dragon, and a frog?" I was like, "I don't know, Nathan. What do you get when you cross a mushroom, a dragon, and a frog?" He looked me right in the eye. "A mushroom, dragon, frog. Duh." And walked away. And I'm like, that's brilliant. I love it.
Yeah.
I just love a mushroom, dragon, frog.
Yeah.
Ugh, he got me. So, I'm going to kick him in the nuts when I see him next time.
Sometimes like, what?
Tracy, be quiet.
Sometimes it's just dumb, simple things like that. Like, you know, they get just stuck in your head and then, like, on a repeat for something. You know, like, you can't ever forget that joke and stuff. You know, it's like that kind of stuff like that.
I tell you, this is a funny story. My brother's always trying to give me jokes. Always. And he thinks he's funny. And he is a naturally funny guy. But not when it comes to stand-up and bits. And when my wife was pregnant with our first child, I was driving to work, and he called. And I put him on there, and he said, "Hey, how's it going?" And I was like, "Fine." He goes, "How's the baby coming?" And I said, "Great. We heard the heartbeat today." And my brother, without missing a beat, goes, "Well, at least we know it's a boy." I had to pull over. I was like, that is hilarious.
Yeah.
And he's like, "What's wrong?" I said, "No, Phil, that's the funniest thing you've ever said." And he's like, "But what about all the jokes that I told you?" Those weren't funny.
Right.
Now his feelings are hurt.
Because
he didn't understand why that was funny. Yeah, another little... My brother was, at the time, working on his third common-law ex-wife. So... She's a keeper, though. She's still with him. She's awesome.
Right. I was going to also bring up, didn't you perform recently with Bobcat?
Yes. Oh my God. That was incredible. So Bobcat showed up, and really intelligent guy. You can kind of tell that from him, but you can also tell he's got about a 4-foot personal space. So when he showed up, everyone could kind of tell something was not quite right. Well, no one knew, but he was really, really good friends with Roddy Piper.
Oh, really?
And I don't think he found out that he had passed until he was already at the club. And when he took the stage, the first thing he did was apologize for being out of sorts. And he explained that he and Roddy were really good friends. And he just found out he had passed away. And Bob said, "You know, I'm not going to do the material I plan to do. I'm just going to tell y'all some stories. And he just opened a vein on stage and let it all out. And it was just amazing, the stories he told. And what was even neater was that was on Friday night. Saturday night, he stuck with the same format, but then added those comic punches to make the stories even bigger and better. If you get a chance to go see Bobcat, it's just amazing.
Yeah. I listened to Nerdist podcast a little bit ago with Chris Hardwick, and they had Bobcat on, and they were, and it's probably a similar type of feeling, because at that time when they recorded it, I believe it was the 1 year anniversary of Robin Williams' death.
Wow.
And he was really close with Robin as well, and so there was a lot of that kind of it took a while for them to get rolling, because he was kind of and Chris brought it up that, you know, he felt that Bobcat was kind of out of it, that, you know, they they started telling a bunch of great Robin stories, and he loosened up and started telling some really great stories and jokes, and but yeah, Bobcat's, you kind of forget, like, he hasn't always been in the spotlight necessarily, he's been behind, he does a lot of work behind the camera, mm-hmm. writing and producing and directing and all that, but he's...
Yeah. I didn't realize he was directing for Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah.
And he told that great story. Do you mind me telling the story?
Sure, yeah.
He would kind of direct when the musical portions of the show, and so, like, the band would come in, play a song, and then the band would play again as they're rolling the credits. Well, it was Nickelback, and the manager comes in before the show starts. Who's the director? He, like, and the guy's like, don't shoot his nose. Don't shoot from his profile. It's like, why? He's got a big nose. And so he's like, okay. So he had the headset on, and he could hear all the cameramen like, pussy. And so, but he stuck, he did what he wanted. And then they start playing again to close the show, and the credits are rolling. And Bobcat goes, tell me when it's 10 seconds. And then finally someone goes, 10 seconds. Shoot the nose! He says, so it was just a camera montage of Chad, whatever his name is, from Nickelback's nose.
Yeah.
The camera 10, camera 7, camera 6, 3, 2, and we're out.
Oh, yeah.
He said the camera was like, what did you know? He's like, I'm going to the car.
Yeah. He was, he told a great story too on there about being on Kimmel, and Jimmy's uncle or cousin Sal. There was something like, something to do, like they gave a gift to. It was like he does a bunch of pranks to him and stuff, and he like left a gift box for, and it like was to somebody worked there or something like that, and Sal saw it or something, and then he was like, man, I've been working on this show for this long and all this, I've never got one single gift and all this stuff, like, he started really getting worked up and complaining about it, and then so like the next day Bobcat got another gift, and it was like the guest, and it was like, it was like a ball cap or something like that, and it was like, hey, thanks for being here or something, and then so like he just like went off again and stuff, and like he just like kept doing this, like just planting all these gifts around for everybody, even though they were fake gifts and stuff, but like just to keep them going, get them worked up and stuff. It's a lot of fun to hear those kind of stories, like these behind the scenes kind of things that we from guys like him. So
yeah, and we all experience them. I mean, they're like our little treasures.
Yeah.
Andrew Frank one time told me that he was hosting at the Funny Bone, and after the show, a lady came out and said, "You were funny," and Andrew's all excited and everything. And then the lady's like, "But that first guy wasn't any good at all." He's like, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of that, like where people always want to like, like as a competition, everybody wants to, you were the best or whatever it is, and yeah. Stuff like that.
Whenever I would get that, I always tell people, like, I only had to be up there 10 minutes. Yeah, he's got to be up there 45.
Yeah.
I was only supposed to do 35, but I did 47 minutes. I just got lost in the laughter at a show, and I felt so bad, and I got scolded.
Uh-oh.
Yes. Sometimes comics can be very particular, and you better, and that's, I rarely ever go over. I usually go, like, going a little under, just so you never know. I think Dale Jones one time told me that he was opening for a magician, and the magician steps up to him right before he hits the stage. Okay, how much time are you doing? He goes, well, just to let you know, on my body I have 16 pigeons. Just hidden in his suit, he had 16 pigeons. It was just like, where do you have 16 pigeons hidden in your suit? Oh man,
I saw Norm Macdonald a little while back at Lumiere. Mm-hmm. And he I don't know what was going on, but we went to the late show. Mm-hmm. and I was sitting in the very back of the room, and you could see him lighting him and stuff there, and he was, you know, he was just like, oh yeah, I see the light, I'm not, you know, I'm gonna stay out, like, and he kept going. Mm-hmm. Which I don't know if it was the best move, like, because it did feel like it got stretched a little thin, and but he, you know, like, he should have just ended on a big laugh, but it felt like he was trying to overcompensate or something, maybe, or, you know, trying to make good, and that's what I ran into somebody else there at the show, and they were saying that they heard that the first show didn't go very well, so maybe the second show he was trying to make up for it, and but yeah, it was kind of weird, just like that he had, you know, they're sitting here lighting him, and he just, like, you know, and he's acknowledging it, like, you know, he's talking about it, and he's, so it's just a really kind of weird ending to a show. But
yeah. I see it sometime, and I've even experienced it. I call it comedy quicksand, because you always want to end on a big laugh.
Yeah.
And when you don't get it, you're like, okay, maybe I should do this. And, yeah. And, okay, that didn't get it. And just like quicksand, the harder you try, the worse it right. gets. Yeah, it's just... It's pain, and it gets painful for the audience. It gets painful for the comics.
Yeah,
I did a show, and they call them taco shows, but in Texas, there's a lot of comedy at Mexican restaurants.
Yeah.
And I did a show. It was Plato Loco was the name of the restaurant, and this lowrider was sitting there, and classic stereotype. He had on the wife beater. He had even the teardrop tattoos, the kind you get in prison.
Yeah.
And he had the socks pulled up and the dickie cut off. And he sat with his arms crossed with a scowl right in front of me the whole set. Didn't laugh or anything. Just sat there.
Right.
And then at the end of the show, he comes up to me. He's like, dude, you're funny. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
I thought he was going to stab me. Yeah. I mean...
me and my wife quote it quite a bit just because it's cracks us up. But I think it was in that movie Marley and Me. There was was that Alan Arkin in that movie or something?
I never saw the movie.
I think that's him. I think it's Alan Arkin. Anyway, there's a line like where, you know, he's like works at this like newspaper. It's like the newspaper editor or something like that. Mm-hmm. And like, and he. And he kind of tells him this like funny story, and he's like, yeah, I'm laughing my ass off over here, you know, like just straight deadpan, you know, like and that's how me and my wife do that all the time. Like when we'll say something, you know, like that doesn't quite hit, and they're like, yeah, you know, we'll just, the other one will be like, yeah, I'm laughing my ass off, you know, like just stuff like that, and it's but just like thinking of that guy, you know, he thinks you're funny, but he never cracks a smile or nothing, just sitting there arms folding.
For stand-up comedy, smilers can be almost worse.
Yeah.
The ones that sit there and just smile. No sound out. Just smile.
Yeah.
I actually saw a comic one time. He actually, smiles don't do anything for me, baby.
Yeah,
come
right.
on. Open that up. Let yeah. it out.
I think it was Rodney Carrington said something like, if you don't laugh, you hold it in, then you're going to fart, and everybody's going to hear it, or something like that.
It sounds like Rodney Carrington.
He's pretty ate up, but he's one of my favorites.
Oh, gosh.
My dad, I was probably listening to him way before I showed up, but my dad would go to the Funny Bone a lot, and we used to see Rodney at Westport and stuff when coming up before, you know, now he's doing
theaters.
Arenas and so
he travels with four buses,
yeah,
and who's ever had the most sleep is the bus he rents. I think one of the buses is just merch.
Oh yeah. Wow.
Yeah. There's a guy, a comic guy named of God, what's his name? Bruce Bruce.
Yeah.
He sold out a like tractor trailer truck of merch one time. Just amazing how much. And that's actually, most of the times, that's where they make more money. I know at my level of comedy, I mean, I've made more money selling T-shirts and bumper stickers than I did from the actual gig.
Huh.
And especially when you're doing like the one night shows, especially like in Illinois, you know, sometimes it's the only entertainment they get, and they're real appreciative. A lot of people don't like traveling and doing shows like that, but you know, they're so appreciative. I had a show in, I think it was called Wilmer, Texas. I mean, if I had turned my headlights, I would have been pitch black. It was out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I took a comic with me. It was one of the first times that I was going to be closing the show. So I took a comic to get another comic to get a guest set. And we pull into the place. It looked like a meatpacking plant. And we sunk into the gravel in the parking lot. And it was just like, oh my God. And he's like, no one saw us. We could leave right now. And no, we could say we got lost. And then the guy who booked me, he comes out. He goes, hey, good, you're here. Go in. Tell them you're the comics, and they'll take care of you. And so we walk in, and the first thing we see is the TV, but it's not on sports or music. It's the closed-circuit security camera of the parking lot. And I was like, oh, my God. What we didn't know was the guy who set the show up didn't okay it with the karaoke guy. And in Wilmer, Texas, on Saturday night, it's all about the karaoke. So they got into like a heated argument, and the karaoke guy refused to let us use his sound system. So his errand was he had to go find a mic and figure out how to plug it in. So when he showed up, we had to move like arcade games for him to figure out how to plug it into the bar's sound system. It was a nightmare. And everyone there did not want us there. They wanted their karaoke because they wanted to do the watermelon shake or whatever the hell that was called. And we started the show. The first guy took the bullet and ate it. But then the second one, they warmed up. Then my friend got up and they liked him. And I had so much fun. And afterwards, they were so appreciative and they loved it. And it really kicked off the karaoke. It was funny. My favorite guy was a guy named Doc. He had teeth like Stonehenge. I mean, they were, yeah. It looks like some kind of Mayan calendar looking thing. And he said, you need to do jokes about ex-wives. I got three of them. And he held up his hand, and he was missing the tip of his index finger and of the ring finger, but the middle finger was there. So it was like a constant shooting the bird. And I just loved it because I always wondered, what did the middle finger know that the index or the ring finger didn't? And it was so much fun.
All right.
And that night, everyone wanted to buy us drinks afterwards. And that is so hard because then you got to drive home.
Yeah.
And, oh, that is such a nightmare. My first actually headlining gig was in Texarkana. And they just wanted somebody for some sort of entertainment. It was, I had to do 45 minutes. But we didn't know it was Dollar Beer Night. So everyone was there for Dollar Beer. And they wouldn't put any tables on the dance floor. So everyone, the closest person was like 60 feet away. I mean, it was a big, beautiful club, but like Drowning Pool had played there the week before. And they had these big screens. So it looked like it was going to be awesome, but it was hard because there was no interaction like you get from the small environment of a small comedy club. But the head of security thought I was great. And their drink was called FUBAR. It was basically Tang concentrate and Everclear in a margarita machine. And he gave me three of those. And when we got home, I was getting out of the rental car, and I had somehow stepped through the seatbelt, and I ended up, I mean, just laid out on the asphalt.
Right.
This is Texas in the fall, so it was cool, but the asphalt was still kind of warm, so it was kind of comfortable. And the other two comics were in the lobby before they realized I wasn't there. And they come out, and God, Rob Peters goes, Sean, did you fall? I said, no. I was attempting an exit with a higher degree of difficulty and couldn't stick the landing. That was so much fun.
Yeah. You mentioned Roddy Piper.
Oh, yeah.
Are you, you're a pretty big wrestling fan, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, in Houston, in the 70s, we had Houston Wrestling. Paul Bosch was a big promoter, and he had everybody. Everybody who was in WWE seemed like they went through Houston at one time. So, I got to see a lot of early wrestling with the Von Erichs, Ric Flair, Roddy Piper, Abdul the Butcher, Jimmy Snuka when he was little and high-flying before he got all kind of roided out,
yeah.
A Junkyard Dog, Tony Atlas. And, kind of when I got into high school and college, I kind of got away with it. And then when I got out of college, it seemed like I got back into it. My wife and I watched a little bit. And I actually went to WrestleMania 17 in the Houston Astrodome. I've been to two. I went to that, which was the largest event that was held there. And I went to the last Selena concert. It was during Texas, the Houston's Livestock Show and Rodeo. That was the second largest attended event. And my wife went to the Garth Brooks, which was the third largest attended event in the Astrodome.
Oh, yeah.
So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And then what? Now they got that arena down there for the Cowboys. And what I think they had 100,000 something people in there or something like that. 103,000 or something like that.
It's funny because from the outside, everyone calls it the George Foreman Grill
because
that's what it looks like. But yeah, that's an amazing arena, that huge screen.
I can't believe how, if it's Astrodome or whatever, one of those, but they do a church in and stuff. Like, is it,
And down in Houston, they have the Summit. I've seen Van Halen, ZZ Top, Ozzy Osbourne at the Summit. The Summit was the place to go see big shows.
Right.
And now it's Lakewood Church. Now here's a funny story. You want to hear a story about Lakewood?
Sure.
Back when I was in high school, our uncle was real religious and did a lot with Lakewood. And me and not his son, but another one of my cousins, we were kind of rowdy. We were into heavy metal and running cars and drinking. And but he wanted us to go to their youth service.
Yeah.
And so we went to their youth service, and they had a prayer time come. And so the youth minister started speaking in tongues. Then everyone on stage started speaking in tongues. Then everybody except for me and my cousin was speaking in tongues.
Right.
Then they tried to make us speak in tongues. And I remember the guy grabbed my cousin by the jaw and squeezed it. He's loosen that tongue, boy. And I was like, oh, Lord, don't let Chris hit him. And I remember that he then started in on me, and I started just naming off bands from the 80s, like Kaja Goo Goo, Skritti Palitti, just to get him off me. And so then after that, all the kids are going to go get pizza at the Pizza Hut. All the kids who were just in there speaking in tongues were strung out on pills, smoking dope, getting into fights. It was insane. And I was just like, really? Really? A minute ago, you were so filled with the God, you were speaking his tongues, and now you're talking to other gods and saying, you can see God. It was insane.
Yeah. Man, I don't know.
I was talking about my cousin. This is something that I've talked to a lot of people about that blows my mind. I graduated from high school in 1987. And on the weekends back then, we'd go get gas and then get beer. And we'd drive around and listen to tunes. That's what we did.
Yeah.
I don't know what, I guess it was when, MAD started, that a lot of the younger people can't believe that that's what we do. Max Fitzgerald, I told him, he goes, like American Graffiti? I was like, I'm not that old. But yeah, it was kind of like that.
Yeah.
It was just, and we all made it home. It was just.
Sure.
It just blows my mind.
I can remember, you know, I'm from Wentzville area, and I can remember, and I'm not the drinking, but that was our Friday nights. We didn't have, this is long before we had movie theaters and things out here. We would just get in somebody's car and cruise around and listen to the, you know, CDs we had or radio, and we kicked it up a notch. We found like the old home video camera, and we started like just like filming the stupid stuff we did on around on Friday nights. And pretty well, it was kind of like around the time, you know, like all the Jackass on TV and all that stuff. So we were, you know, I'm sure that had just something to do with it, just you know, just the home video camera stuff like that. But yeah, man, we had a great time. That's some of my favorite memories, just cruising around with my buddies like that. So
a lot of friends are musicians. That's another reason why I love your podcast, because the music involvement. We hung out with the guys that were in a band called Our Roulette, and they were a pretty cool little local band there in Houston. And the guitarist was Mike Condy. He was a really cool dude. He actually looked like Eddie Van Halen. Kevin Locklear was a singer, bass player, I believe. Shadow, I can't remember Shadow's real name. He was really cool. The drummer, though, Rudy, I think Rude Estrada, I think was his name, but everyone called him Rudy. Amazing drummer. And he thought I was Hawaiian. He didn't know I was Mexican, and so he called me the Flying Hawaiian. And that nickname stuck for years, and it was an awesome nickname. But one weekend, we were out just cruising around, and we totally crashed this girl's party, uninvited, went in, and there was a band that was going to play, and they refused to play for this girl's birthday party. And so I kind of nudged the guys, and I said, we should do it. And so I told the girls, I said, hey, these guys are in their band. And I'm like, really? Would they be willing to play? So my buddy had a Blazer. I had a hatchback Nova. We went to their band room, which was just a couple miles away, loaded all their stacks and equipment, went back to this party that we had just walked into, set up, and played a show till the cops came and told us to turn it off. It was an amazing night.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just one of those great moments.
Sure. Well, man, I guess we'll wrap this thing up, Sean. It's been a lot of fun, man. Getting to sit down and get to know you a little better. And but yeah, man. So come out September 11th and 12th.
Please make reservations by calling 636-281-2233. Both shows start at 8:30, Friday, September 11th, Saturday, September 12th.
All right. And, so friends of the show, Charlie Winfrey, Ryan Dalton, Tim Convey, and Jeremy Helwig, and Sean will be there, too. So, great little lineup for O'Fallon. You got any friends out this way, tell them to come check out some comedy in their own neighborhood.
Yeah. You can also find us on Facebook at O'Fallon Out Loud. So please look us up.
Yeah. All right, Sean. Thanks a lot, man. And,
And thank you. Yep. It's been a great time.
We'll see you later. Episode 112.
See you down the road.